Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Christina, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in some of the workshops that have been added to assist folks during this time of COVID-19, and in specific, the most recent one we had this last Saturday. Welcome, Christina.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for being with us. So, yeah, maybe we could start out kind of by looking generally at what you've seen in terms of having practice support you during this time and using some of those workshops as a way to do that.
Yeah, so these weekend workshops have been lovely. I haven't been able to participate in all of them, but the ones that I have been incredibly supportive. I tend to have difficulty practicing on the weekends in general. It's for whatever reason, I can practice more easily during the week, even though that's my busier time. But weekends, you know, I don't know what happens. But
I bet a lot of people could relate to that, actually. Yeah, even though, as you say, maybe technically there's more quote space. You know, when there isn't maybe as much structure or, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. The rebel comes out or something. I'm not really sure.
another topic.
Right. I'm not really looking at that quite yet. But this last weekend, I loved the theme, which was, you know, the guests arriving at our door as a metaphor for what I see is just life unfolding, right? So sometimes we call them practice opportunities, sometimes we call them really exciting events, or sometimes it's just, you know, the humdrum of the regular day, but it's life unfolding. And we got to practice with greeting every way in which life is unfolding, you know, opening the door to every guest and accepting all of it, you know, bringing it all in. And, you know, what a beautiful way to emphasize how the process of, not, I don't know if it's called the process of practice, but how I relate to practice, I guess, or maybe how I do practice in that sometimes, you know, someone's at the door that I don't want to be there. And if I turn to conditioning, I'm slamming the door on their face, you know, only to have them, you know, find another way in.
Exactly.
And,
so.
And other times, you know, I'm just happy and excited to have who's ever there, and then getting to kind of move through that process of being just in acceptance of all of it, and then even moving beyond that, seeing that all of it's a gift, And once I can comprehend and experience that everything that shows up in my life, I mean, everything is a gift just for me, it's kind of like mind-boggling, right? And it's, you know, I have like today, when I was recording this morning in the year-long retreat, it like took my breath away when I listened to something, you know, and it was this point that was being made about, and I could see why it's a lifelong practice or many lifelong practices, because it is, that's what we're doing here
Yes, exactly so. And, you know, so much of what you just said and what we looked at, as you say, in the workshop on Saturday, and what it feels like is the opportunity for all of us so acutely in this time in particular is to really practice that expanded acceptance, right?
Exactly.
Because for many, many people, this thing that's knocking on the door, metaphorically, or closing us in our houses, right? Literally.
Right, literally.
Is bringing up all kinds of things that we wouldn't choose, and at the same time, blocking many of the ways that we would normally, quote, deal with that, manage that, you know, cope with when things, as you say, you know, without even realizing it, probably a lot of times, something may metaphorically come to our door, and we close the door, maybe without even realizing we're doing that. But I think one of the things that's happening for folks that I keep hearing over and over in these times is the ways that we've closed the door aren't so much available to us. We don't even have the option now because it's so right there in front of us. And so what an amazing opportunity that is to almost be forced in a way to really be with all of it. And as we are with all of it, as we looked at on Saturday, we start to realize the gifts in that.
I think it's the closest I've been to feeling like I'm at the monastery. And I know that sounds kind of out there, but, you know, when you go to the monastery, everything slows down. And there's just only so much you can do. And so everything just comes up to the surface for you. And I really have been experiencing that lately. And you know, when the pandemic hit, I was in a conditioned process before it landed, where I had engaged in this huge project. We were remodeling our house, right? We just tore apart our house, and our lives were really busy, and all this stuff was going on. And I had said, I'm not doing anything extra. I'm just going to get through these next 6 weeks, you know, 2 months, and and then I'll deal with everything after that, including practice, including, you know, taking care of myself, all of those things. And in the middle of that, the pandemic hit. And I'm sitting there, and so for the first 5 or 6 days of the year-long retreat, you know, that was literally, the timing was so beautiful because it was right as we were all just kind of taking all this in. And I was in a state I'm so attached to these conditioned processes. I can't even read the assignments, but I could get on the call and I could hear and I could listen. And it was so amazing, Jen, to have that there for me, to help move me through and to realize that I was in a process where I wasn't living my life. I was waiting for something to end so I could start living my life. Right, and I would have just gone on through that. And
I mean, those are the moments that make you religious, right? Where you just realize, I mean, nothing was going to stop me, right? I was just in that condition track, and I was going to, that's just what was going to happen, and that's just how it is. Yeah. And then, boom, something happens. That visitor comes, and there's no choice about it. And then, I mean, the thing that's such a miracle from what you're saying, Christina, is that on the other side of those things, we're on our knees in gratitude. Thank you for stopping me in my tracks. Thank you for interrupting what was taking my life from me. And it just feels like in these times, one of the things that strikes me so much on the Saturday workshops and in all the virtual stuff, really, that we're all doing with Sangha is that between all of us, we're kind of having the entire gamut of the experience. You know, for some folks, it's amazing. You know, they just have so much space. And for other people, it's busier than ever. And being at home with, you know, just all kinds of things. And that we're all cycling through all the different things that happen with it. You know, one day I'm completely in acceptance with it. The next day I want to shut the door on all of it. And that through these times, it feels like we're all getting to really just take it moment by moment by moment, which again is what's always been what we've been doing, but it's just much more obvious now as we come together in these times.
And I don't think any of us misses the fact that, you know, there is real pain taking place as a result of this pandemic. Absolutely. And even though each of us is having our own experience with it, we're not blind to the fact that there's different, you know, variations on the amount of pain that people are going through around it. And so I just feel like I have to say that it is.
Yes.
I count my blessings and for
absolutely
what they are today. Yeah.
Well, and I, you know, I happen to know there's other projects afoot that Sangha are looking at, which we'll be talking about in weeks to come. But that that as you say, and I know that you're involved with them, and as you say that, one of the things that just strikes me so much about all of this is that it feels like the more present we are with what's here right now, the more available we are.
That's been my experience.
Yeah,
more we can see, the more, you know, something might be right in front of you, but you can't see it because you're not here.
That's right.
Someone may be asking you for help in some way, and it doesn't occur to you that you might be able to help.
Yeah. And it's that image, right, of, you know, if I'm not taking care of this person, the one person mm-hmm. who there is to, mm-hmm. right, then mm-hmm. I can't be of assistance anywhere else. And that, you know, is such a huge gift of all of this. Yeah. Well, Christina, I see we are at the top of the hour. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
No, just thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. And for being here. Thanks
for
to everyone.
Yeah, amen. Yeah. And thanks to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take good care, Christina.
You too, Jen. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Christina. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm kind of like Christina and Jen.
Good.
And probably like almost everybody else. How about you?
Yes, all of the above. All of the members of the guest house have come in their various forms over the past few weeks. Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as noted, they always do. It
yes.
just feels like everything is so much more obvious now, or so much more available, or so much more something.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I have announcements here.
All right.
In 2013, we gave up feeling bad. This Saturday, April 18th, the International Day of No Self-Hate, join you, Sherry, in a workshop to find out what we're letting go of in 2020. The workshop is free of charge, but we ask that participants register by 12 noon Pacific time on Friday.
Yeah. I got to confess, I'm kind of excited.
We haven't, good.
You know, I mean, it's been, how many years is that? Is it 7 years since we?
Yes.
Since we gave something up as a group, as a sangha?
Yes.
I think we're due.
Yes, yes. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
And if you're already meditating in the morning or wish to start, enjoy the extra support of meditating with sangha with virtual meditation groups. These 30-minute conference call meditation sessions happen 7 days a week. For a full schedule of the groups, visit the virtual meditation groups webpage at livingcompassion.org. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a couple of reminders. If you'd like to talk with Sherry today, press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great.
It's keeping me to 5 minutes, isn't it, Michael? That's always the challenge.
Wonderful.
I don't know what that little chime was that went off, but I thought, oh, maybe if I get too wound up, you just turn that little chime on and signal me. All right, yeah. Here we go. Thank you, Michael.
Sure, you're welcome. first caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Kara from Maryland.
Hey, Kara.
Well, hello there.
Hello. I had a question about, I was wanting to look at the conditioning that says that anger specifically is something to either avoid or to be ashamed of if it arises. And
now, I'm guessing that's just for you, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was just checking. Okay.
Yeah. And it's not a recent thing. It's been like a lifetime of it, specifically with anger. And it somehow suggests that something is wrong or bad, and all the clever ways to just avoid that. And I was just wondering how people who don't have that conditioning relate to the energy of anger.
Well, let me ask you this first. I don't know how we've never talked, have we? Have we ever talked?
Yeah.
Do we know each other?
Not in person, but through the phone.
All right. Okay. Well, I wouldn't say an anger expert. It's more a rage expert. So,
okay. Great.
I just have to project what other people have told me who don't seem to experience it. But let me ask you this. Was somebody in your family an angry person when you were growing up?
No, actually, it's more like anger should not, it was not even, a display of anger would was not even like, it's almost like good people don't get angry, basically.
Right. The right people just don't have that emotion.
Yes.
And clearly you're the right people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm guessing somewhere along the line you encountered it?
Within.
Uh-huh. Okay. Just
and so it's
right.
Basically almost like being afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. Because what is frightening about it? Is it too much energy? Might you be out of control? Would you become dangerous? Or is it more just that it's a real indication that there really is something wrong with you? You're deeply flawed in some way if that's how you feel.
Yeah, like you should not be feeling this. And it's not even about like acting it out on anything because people would say that I'm a very calm person, you know.
Ah, okay. So you don't behave badly. Nobody knows you're the wrong person.
Yeah.
Internal wrong person. Uh-huh. And is there any kind of fear that you would that it would come out if you allowed it to be there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You
I've seen it come out a few times and it's been like, "Oh my gosh."
Uh-huh. Was it okay in the moment, and then it was afterwards that it wasn't okay?
Afterwards, it would be like being ashamed.
Yeah, but at the time, did it kind of feel good?
The most recent one, yes, because it was more like an assertive sort of like a clear no. You know, but
you're standing
the one
yourself.
Before did not feel good in the moment.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So you clearly have a lot of experience watching the nuances of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. And I pretty much take it for long walks.
Uh-huh. So the emotion, the energy is not a problem. You can go out and dissipate it through physical activity. And I'm guessing that you don't even have a difficulty with the fact that I don't know how to say this without tripping over it, but it's understandable if somebody steps over your boundary, or if somebody treats you disrespectfully, or if somebody whatever, then that kind of a pushback reaction seems reasonable, seems like the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then all that we've got is a voice in your head that's telling you, that's making you feel ashamed, that's making you feel embarrassed, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, and yes, the commentator, and also it's almost like that, like a self-hate as a, like experiencing it as this wrathful energy inside.
That you feel, or that is being aimed at you?
The latter.
Yeah, okay, so self-hate is hitting you with a wrathful energy.
Yes.
You know, you've got to appreciate that, right? So the very thing that is telling you you shouldn't be angry is angry with you.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh, yeah. You know, have we talked often enough that you know I'm fond of an expression called horse bucky?
Not horse bucky,
yeah.
No.
All right. Well, it's just because we, you know, try to keep language somewhat. you know what that means. Or hogwash,
yeah.
Would be a, right? I mean, it's just crapola, right? There is nothing to this at all. This is a self-hating voice in your head. It's ego controlling you by making you feel bad about something that there is absolutely no reason to feel bad about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the way that we can address something like that is like this. Do a little facilitation with it. Okay, so when it comes at you, you can say something along the lines of, so what I hear you projecting from that angry place you're in is that I shouldn't be angry. Did I get that right? Can you see where I'm going with this?
Say that again.
Well, the self-hating voice is the one that has the anger issue. It's coming at you with anger, wrath, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's the one with the angry issue, and what it's raging at you about is the fact that you got angry. And so you just have it own its projection. It's talking to you from an angry place about you being angry. No.
Right. And also, when anger does arise, and like because specifically in the past, because belief that, you know, like good people, quote unquote, don't get angry, and just
that's
acknowledging, even
apart.
Acknowledging, oh, like I was really angry at the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, without
drama, you know,
around it.
That's right. And because of the relationship that you already have with it, you can explore it in all kinds of ways, right? Wow, that's a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Whee! Now,
okay.
What happens, of course, is that that energy has a label and a story attached to it. But what if it didn't?
Uh-huh.
What if it were just an explosion of energy inside of you? Then,
uh-huh,
of course, you can take it for a walk.
Yes,
right?
And I do.
Yeah. So not the what I'm encouraging you to consider is dropping the whole conversation.
Okay.
Just drop it. Just forget it. Just no. We're not doing that. No. Tough.
Okay.
So to the voice, the ego, self-hating voice in your head, if anger is an issue for you, stop being angry. You're yelling at me. You know, if you don't like anger, don't do it. It has nothing to do with me. I'm fine.
Got it.
Okay, very good. Let me know, okay?
Okay, and I'm looking forward to Saturday's workshop.
Good. I didn't want to do too much of a sales pitch, but I think you'll enjoy it based on the conversation that we've
had. Oh, I'm signing up tomorrow morning.
Okay, very good. All right. Take good care of yourself, okay?
All right, cool. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for joining us, Kara. Sherry, I really appreciated how you brought out projection and that's what's really going on. And as we do in practice, we're trying to find out what is actually going on. And that's what was revealed, it seems like, in that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, get to the bottom of it. Like, I saw something recently where there was an exchange with one person being very critical and judgmental about how another person was being. And so person A is being judgmental and critical about person B. And person B says, if you get to be however you want to be, why shouldn't I get to be however I want to be? Which is a very, very good point. Yeah?
Yes.
So
yes.
You get to be critical and judgmental. I get to be whatever I want to be. Nanner, nanner, nanner.
Nanner, nanner, nanner.
We don't have to take it on. We don't have to buy into it. We just don't. It is one relationship. You know, people have beliefs about the relationships they have to be in. You know, there are people in their lives that they, you know, so if they want to or not, it doesn't matter. They have to be in that relationship because that's just how it is. With egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, no, we do not need to be in that relationship.
Right. Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Reminds me of what you said about somebody being critical and then responding with, well, I will look to see what of that is true for me. And
yes.
It's just such a great response.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to look into that. Yeah. We could even say, thanks for bringing that up. That's a really interesting subject. I'm going to see if any of that, how that fits for me. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Just Teflon is the image, right?
Yes. Yes. Totally Teflon. And we have another caller here.
Right. Hello?
Next caller.
Hi.
You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Joyce in California.
Hey, Joyce.
Hello, Joyce. What are you seeing?
Well, today is a very good day.
Oh,
and
good. As compared to all those other days?
Oh, yes. Of course, about Sunday, by Sunday evening, I didn't care if I lived or died. And thank you for all the support that we have and just sticking with it and signing up for everything that I possibly can. And I just, it's amazing. You know, I've been doing this for a while, and you've been telling me the same thing all these years, and it really works. And I see,
but we still have to do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. It's like I'll get to a point where I believe conditioning going, well, you can just not be, you know, today you can just not do that.
Today you can just go unconscious and suffer.
Yeah. And of course, that's like hitting a patch of ice in the winter and just slipping right into it and the next thing I know, I wake up and there I am, like I was on Sunday.
So, well, you know, Joyce, what you're describing is the reason that 12-step program started.
Mm-hmm.
The process is exactly the same, right? Whatever it is that voice in the head is talking a person into is exactly the same. We should just have 12-step programs for every aspect of human behavior. Or we could get it that whatever your deal is, it's the same process. So what you're describing is, so, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I woke up, passed out someplace, I'd passed out someplace, I didn't know where I was, and I didn't have all my clothes on. And I said, whoa, I need to get a grip on myself here. You know, I'm going to quit drinking. And so for about 3 days, I don't drink. And then the voices start in. Well, you could have one. I mean, you know, okay? Now, I'm not going to tell you every step of that because you know it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying you're an alcoholic, but we all know how that goes. And when a person finally quits drinking, it's because they've heard that story so many times. They've fallen for it so many times. They've had a disastrous outcome so many times that even they can't believe it any longer. And so when the voice starts in again, the answer is no, I'm not going to do that. No, actually, I can't handle it. No, actually, I won't be okay. No. And that's where you need to get with those voices talking you into going unconscious.
You know, when you say it seems so simple. And
well,
when
it is.
I know.
It is that simple. And through gritted teeth the other day, I said to somebody, it's this simple. If you're not happy, get out the recorder, put whatever it is in your ears that enables you to hear a recording that brings you back to center, and listen to that until the urge to hurt yourself passes. If you are not happy. And the range of if you're not happy is huge. That's everything from, oh, God, I'm bored, to, I'm a vegetarian, but what I really want is a cheeseburger. Oh, my God, here I'm stuck at home. I can't even get a cheeseburger. Vegetarian, so I don't have any hamburger in the house. Oh, my God, all I want is a cheeseburger. Okay, so, or I don't want to do the laundry. Or I wish those kids would be quiet. Or why do I have to walk the dog every day? Or those are all unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not the same as having a broken leg, right? But those are all unhappy. Those are all egocentric, karmic conditioning, self-hate, picking at a person. As soon as you become aware of it, as soon as you have moved from, hey, Joyce, isn't it a beautiful day where we live today? Yeah, you've noticed that, right?
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous day.
Yes.
Empirically speaking, it is a magical day, right? And so as soon as attention moves away from life is gorgeous, it is beautiful, I am so grateful to be alive, as soon as it moves away from that into, oh, God, those kids, or whatever it is, I have to make my bed again. Oh, my God. Another shower? Jeez, I am so put upon. Okay? As soon as it gets into any of its grousing and griping, you just reach over and you pick up the recorder and you put the earbuds in or the AirPods or whatever you're using and you punch play and you start listening to a recording that reminds you of what you have been talked into temporarily forgetting.
The first thing that comes out negative.
That's right. The first one. That's what we're tuning ourselves to. Because with our earlier example, the person who drinks, they drank because of exactly that process.
Mm-hmm.
First it's the kids, and then it's the shower, and then you have to make the bed, and then you've got that thing you've got to do for work, and then there's that, God, person I live with. And then there's, okay, and by the time I get through a whole day of that, I, by God, need a drink at noon.
And you know what I think? What dropped in for me, I didn't think, it dropped in that with what we're doing is we're seeing conditioning when it's a little bit more quiet. We're seeing it sooner and sooner and
as it starts.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly right.
And it's having the willingness to say, whoopee, I saw you. Oh, boy.
No more. And you know, Joyce, you don't even need to do that. What you're training yourself for is to pick up the recorder. Because if you engage in a conversation with it, the chances are it's going to win. Because
it
it's been doing this so much longer than we have. Right? And so we just don't. In the beginning, I'm not going to do sports analogies, but anything you want to get good at, if you want to get good at something, you do it all the time. You don't do it once in a while, because once in a while won't make you good at it. So if you want to get used to being here, if you want to live here, if you want to be happy, then that's what you're training yourself to do constantly, keeping attention here, 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 here. All right, let me know.
Thank you. I changed.
I'm a new woman.
I'm going to catch it.
All right. Okay, good.
Thank you, Sherry.
And keep that recorder in your hand, not even in your pocket.
Okay.
All right.
I will.
Thanks, Joyce.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Joyce. Sherry, I was appreciating how you were describing the many different ways that unhappiness appears.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Very valuable to see it in all of its different forms.
Oh, yeah. I was looking at it just now, Michael. And so I live in a place where I am absolutely surrounded by trees. I practically live in a tree house, right? Mm. And the number of people who then spend all of the all day long, every day, burning stuff. If you wanted to, you know, if you don't like trees, why do you come and live in them?
Mm. Right.
Right? And that's, that can sound crazy to people, but it's an example of it.
Mm.
You know, it's an example. We can either be here appreciating and enjoying what is here, or we can make it a problem and make it a job and something we're burdened by. It's unnecessary.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. Sherry, we're going to hear from our RL training program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chris calling from Boston.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
What's going on?
Well, I wanted to continue my exploration of the comfort zone.
Uh-huh. Ego's comfort zone? That would be...
Ego's comfort zone.
Is that
exactly
the one we're talking about? Uh-huh. Okay, good.
So what I saw recently was through the lens of control.
Uh-huh.
So, like, one way that it could work is, you know, ego will say, well, you can't do that because you don't feel the right way to in order to do that.
Uh-huh. Even though I'm guessing it occurred to you to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, so that's one angle is, you know, well, you know, you can't do that because you're not mentally sharp enough right now. So, you know, you got to.
Does it have, Chris, does it have a solution to your problem or does it just leave you with that problem? Does it tell you maybe eating some sugar, something like that would, or having a cup of coffee or something would help you out? Or does it just point out what's wrong with you and go on its way?
Oh, yeah. No, it'll offer something like coffee. That's definitely a go-to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I see, or what another angle that I saw that's related is all of that, you know, well, you're not mentally sharp enough, so drink coffee. Okay, I go do that. And then it says, okay, well, you know, now you're mentally sharp enough, good, so produce this great work and then other people will be impressed. So it's really controlling. It wants to look good to other people.
No, Chris. Au contraire. It wants to control you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because have you noticed how often after you go on with your sharp self and produce that great work, it's critical of it? Or whatever comes back from other people, it's got an opinion about that. Even if they claim to like it, they probably really didn't. They're probably just any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. 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 You know, that's a really big one to catch on to. It literally does not care a flying fig about you. It's just that you care how other people see you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can be tortured over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can be very subtle because, you know, it can really affect, it can latch on to practice and how I view practice as well. So, you know, well, you want the perfect feeling, so you just need to be present, and then, you know, then just you're not practicing hard enough, so that's why you don't have the perfect feeling.
Wow. You.
Mm-hmm.
And the implication in that that has been with us for so long, that it actually knows.
Hmm.
You know, what occurs to me, Chris, would be kind of fun is to, when next time it says something like that, just turn around and say, okay, well, show me how to be present.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Quick trip into the void. or something more, you know, if you want to give it a fighting chance. How do you know that I'm not present? How do you know that I'm not, actually this isn't the perfect way for me to be feeling right now? It's very talkative.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When it's talking and you're listening. But as soon as you switch roles and you start talking, it's got nothing to say.
Exactly, yes, because I noticed, I mean, this is another field note from my foray beyond the comfort zone, but I noticed that there was a lot of talking recently about, you know, just going on and on about what needs to be done, and you know, you don't feel, you know, you can't do it, it's too much, and you don't have the right feeling for that, and whatever. And so I just decided, okay, you know, I have the hands and the feet right now, so just don't listen to what's going on between my ears and just pick up mm-hmm. a recorder and just start saying what I'm doing mm-hmm. and just mm-hmm. say, okay, I'm getting up. Okay, I'm getting up now and doing, I'm going to start doing this task and here I go. And it really did like take the microphone away.
Yes. Yes. And because we can only attend to one thing at a time,
mm-hmm.
what you're doing is attending to presence. And so there's actually no room for that ego voice. Of course, it'll try to distract you and make room, right? But as long as there's the, it's just exactly the way you lay it out. Hey, now I'm walking across the room. Now I'm looking at that. Oh, I'm looking out the window. What a beautiful day. Now I'm going to go sit down at the computer and I'm going to, now I'm turning on the program. Now I'm typing the, now I'm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
it's kind of one of those, Chris, it's kind of one of those that I was talking about with Joyce. Now you wouldn't want to do that for the rest of your life, right? Although it is kind of a habit that we develop for being present, so that wherever you are, awareness is expanded, so that you are not identified, as you said, inside between your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness is expanded, so there's an awareness of his surroundings and him, his whole body, what's going on in his mind. As you said, where his feet are, where his hands are, everything that's around, everything that's happening, all of that is available to you. And that little exercise I was just offering is a way to expand awareness. Because as you've noticed, what we do is go with conditioned mind and then we're just lost in there. Between our ears, and we have no idea what's going on around us or even what we're doing.
Yes, and I think the just, you know, on a final note, because I know we're at time with 5 minutes or have already passed it, but just that there's, it dropped in that there's no change in consciousness without a change in behavior. And so yes. there really was no other choice to make other than to move my hands and feet and get up and do it.
Yes. 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 And you didn't need to be in consultation with that voice in your head, which right. is a powerful thing to prove to ourselves, right? That voice in the head is not making anything happen. It's not. It is a narrator, and it has actually nothing to do with our lives at all. So when you want to get up and move, you just get up and move.
Oh, which is
whether
the opposite.
Feel like, whether you're mentally acute or not, what is it? What does
sharp.
It tell you? You're sharp, yeah, or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, you know, freedom and not control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not that we're in control, right? It's just that we're not controlled. And the relief of that is enormous. Once we're not controlled by ego, we actually have no desire to be in control. It's just not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
All right.
Keep you posted.
I will. All right. Go
That's
happy.
Right. Good night. You too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. And Sherry, we have more callers here.
Good.
As soon as I get this queue organized here. All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rico. Can you hear me?
Hey, Rico.
Yes, Rico. Good to hear you. How are you doing?
Well, I'm still standing.
Good.
So,
you could sit down for this, though, Rico, if you wanted to.
Oh, that was good. I was just enjoying the previous caller because I was raised from Boston. I was looking for some kind of accent, but I didn't hear it.
Nah, he's a transplant.
Oh, I get it. Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had kind of an insight I wanted to share with you and look for any commentary, and that is I was educated by the Jesuits, and the Jesuits taught us to find out for ourselves. So in a certain way, there's a real parallel between the Buddha inviting us to do the same thing, to prove what is true for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to prove to myself the power of self-hate over and over and over again. And I recently had an experience where I've really been struggling with health, and any kind of, how would we say, gaps in noodling and gaps in the conversation, gaps in the narration, and glimpses of emptiness are so welcome, just mm-hmm. like the treasure, the Holy Grail. And
yeah.
What I've been noticing is when there is these moments of relief, I will literally do my prostrations in just profound gratitude that sometimes it feels like the practice is coming together. Sounds reasonable, right? Well.
Yeah, well, sort of. Uh-huh. I think there's more, so I'm gonna wait here.
And just gratitude, like just simple gratitude. And then this self-hate comes in when I least expect it.
That's right.
And it's just extraordinary.
Left that back door open, and in came the intruder.
Wow. It's just, and I just have to go back to the beginning. It says, oh, this really is the training, isn't it? Egocentric karma conditioning self-hate is not only still here, but just gaining ammunition to be so vicious more and more and more. And
Rico, probably not, actually. So just right there at that juncture. So what I said was you left the back door unlocked and in came the intruder. And to me, that's what practice is, right? So what we would like, we think, we assume, we would like, is for to practice along, and then I get it, you know, I see how it works. I get it, and I'm really grateful, and this is wonderful. But I don't have to pay attention every single minute of every single day, do I? I mean, can't I ever just have a little rest? And we forget to lock the back door, and the intruder comes in. And so that, to me, is the gift in it. Because at the moment of death, we want to be here. We don't want to have drifted off somewhere because things were going great and it's rosy and I'm so grateful and gratitude just slid over into not quite here and not quite conscious, and then I'm gone and then I'm gone.
I can see that. Yeah. And it's, I think it was last week. I never miss a Tuesday show, so I want to just acknowledge how grateful I am to you all, everybody that puts it together. And it's as if someone spoke last week, I believe it was, or you were speaking to someone about, like, presence is... Presence is the gift. Presence is the treasure. Presence is everything. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe you have something there in your response that, I was into gratitude somehow, and presence leaned into some kind of other state, as opposed to vigilance or awareness.
Yeah.
And presence. that's how self-hate
yeah.
can come in.
And it'll only be there as long as we're not. So every time we nod off, here it comes. Not because we're being punished, not because it's an enemy, but just because we gave it an opening.
And I think the other thing you said was, things are kind of coming together, and I kind of get it, and I'm on the program, and I'm kind of like cruising. I'm kind of like on the crest, and I'm not. I just have a story that I am.
Well, or, Rico, if we did a little surfing image, right? There you are. It's a beautiful day. It's absolutely gorgeous. The water is perfect. You're just riding the crest of that wave. You know, it's just a peak experience. And then you lose focus just for a split second.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're trying to drink the ocean.
And I think the story or the image is that, well, it's like you said earlier, it's just so exhausting to remain present. Well, it's not.
No, it's actually, it is for ego.
Exactly. Actually, it's energizing. It's the relief of relief. It's the treasure of all treasures, and yet somehow the egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate can turn into, God, I am so exhausted from being present.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we just laugh and say, yeah, good. It is my goal in this lifetime to wear you out completely. Ego.
And that's just it. It's like I that's the crux of it right there, is that I feel, someone feels that, oh man, it's not like I've licked it, but I said, man, I've really got this. Like I know how to do this. And there's some kind of confidence, or I don't know what the word is.
Hubris.
Boy. What a bullseye. Hubris. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, and you can just see the devil rubbing those imaginary hands together, right?
Oh, yeah. Really.
Get him. He's not looking.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that, it, which is, of course, what we come back to, which is the humility that says, can say thank you every time I get smacked because it's for me. It's not being done to me. It's being done for me. It is the deepest desire of my heart to be here for every single moment of life. And if I nod off, I'm grateful that I get a little slap that wakes me up and says, are you here? Am now.
That's so helpful, Sherry. That's particularly on the heels of some of the pastors in America have said, well, we're not going to obey this constitutional violation that says we can't gather on Easter Sunday because that's only Satan telling us that we can't. And I was thinking, wow, I suddenly realized that all of the Christian education I had in my life, Satan could be substituted for egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Truly. It brings it right home. It's not just like a myth with forked hooves and horns in it. Wow.
Yeah.
It brings it so much closer to meaning and vigilance. And
somebody was talking to me recently. Well, it was Ashwini. I might as well confess because she's got a background, of course, obviously in Hinduism and talking about how Dharma gets presented as a Dharma. And vice versa. So Dharma gets presented as not Dharma, and not Dharma gets presented as Dharma. And in that same way, so Satan is saying we can't congregate. And, of course, the person doesn't realize Satan is way closer to them than that person telling them they can't congregate. It's happening right inside their own head.
And the word hubris is still ringing for me. I think that was so helpful, Sherry. So.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are so welcome, sir. You take care of yourself, okay?
I'm doing my best here, and thank you for the show and all the Saturday programs. And it's so helpful, and I'm just really thankful and grateful. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Me too.
Thank you, everybody.
You're
helps,
welcome.
Helps keep this program going, and... Yep. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you. Gosho.
Gosho. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. Another amazing conversation, Sherry. And I'm going to bring on one more caller here, Sherry.
All right.
I think we have time here. Next caller.
Hi.
You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Andrea calling.
Hi, Andrea.
Hello, Andrea.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I'm looking at control.
Yes.
So I heard a conversation yesterday that's very similar to what I've been experiencing. Basically, it was this woman talking about her son, and I've been having issues with that too. Since the pandemic, education has moved to online, and my son has decided he thinks it's vacation, and it's very hard to get him to even attend school, let alone do his assignments. And so I've been in a real big state of agitation and just felt like I needed to get some guidance. And I guess what I've been seeing is that there's just definitely seeing a lot of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate around this. And then The other thing I'm seeing is there is this
Wait. We might only have time for one. And so let's do that one, okay? How does that go together? How do you see a lot of self-hate around this?
Well, it's projected outward and inward, you know, just anger at him and yeah, just feeling really identified. And yet there is this part that can say, you know, the mentor does come in and says he's adequate to his life. And so then what happens is these teachers email me and say he's missing assignments. And then I feel like even if I can relinquish control, I feel like I'm supposed to be the proxy to get him to do everything, and that these teachers don't understand I have no control over him.
Well, now that's an interesting one. How old is this child?
14.
14. Okay. And is he used to pretty much ruling the roost?
At home, yes. He's never been a docile child, and we never, ever would have wanted to homeschool him. And so now that he's not in a physical, you know, school, it's really difficult.
Okay, because you're trying to talk him into doing what he doesn't want to do.
Yes.
And so are you in charge of things like computers and other screens and items like food and things like that?
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, it's very hard to regulate his screen usage because he has to use a screen for school, but then I never know if he's actually just playing games or, you know, or that kind of thing.
Well, you know what? This is what we call the karma of having decided to have a child. Okay.
Yeah.
And what that comes down to is you're in the room with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the screen for as long as it takes for him to do his homework. And if he does his homework and he doesn't get notes back from the teacher saying he didn't do his assignments, then he can be on the screen for another hour. And then it goes bye-bye.
Yeah, and Yuhan has pretty much taken over that role because I, at this point, have had to relinquish it, and so that's what I'm looking at.
Uh-huh. And is he doing a good job?
It seems like it's better than what I've been doing because I seem to stir up resentment, whereas he...
You know, Andrea, here's I am a hardcore human being. I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
Uh-huh.
But the very idea of being intimidated by a child's reaction to me is something that is incomprehensible. I would have so little interest in whether a 14-year-old child resented me for requiring him to do what he is legally and I am legally required for him to do,
yeah,
that it would not even make it onto the radar screen.
And I guess what I'm feeling is not much intimidating. It's more that I feel like I'm ineffective, like I'm not being effective because I am stuck.
Well, yes. Okay. Well, then that's a very good thing, but abdicating the responsibility doesn't necessarily help you with the conditioning, clearly. Right.
Yeah.
And so you decide what the parameters are and you lay those out and then you stick to them. And then there's no requirement to get upset.
Mm-hmm.
This is how it is. This is what you will do. Mm-hmm. You are a child. You live in my house.
Right.
When you are no longer a child or you no longer want to live in my house, you are welcome to do whatever you like.
Right.
Now, if you hear voices in your head that say, this means I don't love you, well, they're wrong. I love you very, very, very much. I love you so much that I want to take responsibility for doing everything I can possibly do to give you the best possible shot at life that you can have. And you can, once you're an adult, you can resent me until I'm dead of old age. That will be absolutely fine. But right now, I am the parent and you are the child, and you will do what I say for you to do. And you make it reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not going to put him into hard labor. You're not going to mistreat him. You're going to require that he does what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can do it with kindness. You can do it with humor. You with me?
I guess I have some stupid dust. I mean, I feel like I try, and he's very, very hard to control. But, I mean, it has been better today. So it's definitely been better the last day. So,
well, maybe listen to this again. And see if you can get rid of the dust. It's really an important issue for you,
mm-hmm.
because believing that this is a difficult situation will cause everyone to suffer. Seeing that it's not at all a difficult situation will make it easier for everybody.
Hmm. Well, that certainly could be helpful, because conditioning comes up with all, you know, disaster scenarios of how he'll ruin his life and all that.
Well, he certainly will be on his way if he is not required at age 14 to show up and do the very, very simple things that a 14-year-old child is required to do. Yes,
right.
He will be well on his way to ruining his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get to help him not do that. And as I say, you can do it with lightness and humor and love. It's actually possible to have it be a good time for everybody.
So basically being in the same room and just attending to everything that's being done.
That's exactly right. You have this length of time to do your homework. If you get your homework done, then you have this length of time to play games or whatever it is that you want to do.
Right.
Then I'm picking up the computer or the iPad or whatever the heck it is, the phones or whatever, and I'm leaving the room. You're mm-hmm. welcome to read. You're welcome to call your friends. You're welcome to, well, calling your friends would be hard, but you. Yeah?
Yeah. I'll
because.
Oh, go
yeah,
ahead.
Because Andrea, here's the thing. This is if there are any child experts on, they can let me know. Okay, but what happens to us is that kids are absolutely intuitive, and they are absolutely tuned in to our uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he can feel that uncertainty in you, and that's what he plays off of. When there's no uncertainty in you, there'll be nothing to play off of.
And that's a good point. So really,
yeah.
it sounds like it's being consistent.
That's exactly right. And you've got to be resolved in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's your part of the program.
Right.
You and here's the deal: you need to be as resolved in yourself as he is in himself, and then you'll be a fair teen.
Hmm.
You can do it, Mom. All right. Thanks, okay. Andrea. Let me know, huh?
I will. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. And Sherry, that was a wonderful conversation. I learned a lot for my circumstances. And I'm grateful that you're here and all of our callers and listeners joined us. And I'm grateful to be a part of
sangha
it myself.
And, sangha and practice, huh?
Sangha and practice. Yeah. Winning combination.
Yeah.
All right. Don't forget to treasure
yourself. Thank you,
Michael. Thank you, Sherry.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Okay.
See you soon.
See you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.